Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, book clubs aren't just for women, and beer is our holy grail. I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
And we're the Drunk Guys. And this week we are talking about Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code.
We're recording this a couple weeks before Dan Brown's new book comes out. We obviously have not read the new book because it's not out yet, but you know, since all his books are mostly the same, I think this will give you a pretty good idea about what the new book's going
to
be.
I think we could probably predict, if we were to read the synopsis that the publishers put out, I could tell you 80% of that plot right now.
You know what? We'll probably do that.
We will try that, yeah. But I need to lubricate the thought with some beers. So let's actually start with a beer right away. Nate, you brought this. The name makes a lot of sense. Maybe we should tell about the plot, but...
All right, so in the plot, there's all this stuff about the search for the Holy Grail as if it's a serious thing. So I brought the least serious beer possible, which is called Monty Python's Holy Grail.
This is a beer from Black Sheep Brewing in the UK.
Yep.
It is an amber gold ale tempered over burning witches.
Over burning witches. That's what makes it delicious.
Oh, man, that is I'm like Steve Austin here.
There you go. Although I know this is kind of silly and sort of works better for Fool than for this book. But you know what? Monty Python the Holy Grail was just as historically accurate as the Da Vinci Code. So I think it's fine.
It is at least as historically accurate. Is that all right? This is pretty good. You know what? It tastes kind of like a really nice Budweiser.
It does. I was thinking that too.
It's nothing remarkably good. It's like I think they spent most of their time designing this can and yeah. Trying to work as many Monty Python things into it. You got Your Mother Was a Hamster and Your Father Smelled of Elderberries line on there. They got like the little cartoon foot slash hand pointing at things. Funny beer. So the whole book, this is in a series. This is not even the first one in the series, but this was the first one to become wildly successful and was a huge, huge bestseller and crappy movie.
But you don't need to read them in order. They really have little to do with each other.
In fact, you don't even need to read all of them. You could just read one four times, and you yep. basically read them all. So the main character is a guy named Robert Langdon, who is a, get ready for it, symbologist.
He is a Harvard professor of symbology.
Which we'll get into the science of symbology.
A little later.
He is on a lecturing gig in France, in Paris. And he is called to a murder scene at the Louvre, which is actually how the book really starts, is with the scene of the murder, where this character who is the curator
of the Louvre.
The director of the Louvre is murdered by some menacing, hulking character, shoots him, but the guy is very crafty. He pulls a work of art off the wall, triggers the anti-theft cages to shut down and traps him in the room, but he's mortally wounded and he's, oh, I'm going to die, but God damn it, I'm going to share this crazy secret that I am the keeper of.
I can't just say my secret out loud because it's the secret of the Holy Grail. I have to protect it, so I'm going to leave clues that only the Harvard symbologist and my random daughter can figure out. And I'm trying to leave it to her, so he takes off all his clothes and writes stuff on the floor and lays down in the position of the Vitruvian Man, that really famous Leonardo da Vinci
drawing. Yeah, right. And he goes, so dark, the con of man is the anagram that he writes, and call Robert Langdon. And so the French police, just like the French do with lots of things, they surrender to the evidence at hand and they call Robert Langdon. Which, shitty policing, by the way. Call Robert Langdon, definitely. But call him to an interrogation room. Call him to, your whatever precinct headquarters and have him talk there. Do a little good cop, bad cop on him.
Don't call him to the crime scene itself.
Yeah, clearly, this book's from 2003, but CSI was on. Don't they understand forensics? Let's have this guy walk in and look at shit.
All that fiber evidence, can't they get him on that?
And semen everywhere. It's always semen.
Yeah.
Robert Langdon, I know this guy. Have you put on the blacklight? Let's follow the jizz trail that leads us to the villain. Would have been a shorter book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, Robert Langdon figures out, the French, the police guy, they have a policeman, have a theory of what has happened already, and he's like, actually, it refers to this other more obscure thing. Educated police officer, I could figure it out. And that is basically how every scene of the book is going to go. Robert Langdon is going to get to some situation with some weird clue that he understands because of his expertise in symbology and can lead them to the next clue, which makes you think right away, if this is a big conspiracy to hide this information but also preserve the information, how many of these clues are just set up permanently? Like this domino rally of just discovering it is set up.
Just laying out there.
And then one guy just holds the one clue to start it. And just in case I'm about to be murdered. Let me set it up. I have, like, a plan. So someone else could find the information. It's kind of, I mean, that's part of the problem with all conspiracy theories. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It requires too many things to work perfectly for it to actually work.
So, I mean, we could go on and on about what happens in the book, because there are a ton of things. Like, how many chapters are there? 125?
Each chapter is...
like, 4 pages.
Some are a page, which is kind of nice. There are 105 chapters plus an epilogue.
So anyway, a lot of stuff happens, and it all involves weird history, art, symbol kind of nonsense. And then eventually they sort of almost arrive at the secret of... And they go into all this stuff. Oh, is the Knights Templar protecting the Holy Grail? And the church is trying to hide the influence of the sacred feminine and all this stuff about Mary Magdalene and the Merovingians. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh, we're only scratching the surface of these kinds of things.
Well, the real conspiracy, I guess, of the book, within the web of conspiracies, is that the Holy Grail is not a physical thing, right? You think of the Holy Grail, you think of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Holy Grail is the chalice from the Last Supper. Is, I don't know, does it have magic powers or something?
Well,
it probably depends on who you
ask. According to Indiana Jones, it does.
But it's a wooden cup, according to Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. But actually, the Holy Grail is not a thing at all in Dan Brown's universe. The Holy Grail is the tomb with the remains of Mary Magdalene. And that is related to all this other information that Mary Magdalene became Jesus' wife. Their offspring became the Merovingian kings of medieval France. And more ridiculous crap like that.
Of medieval France.
Right, they skip over the 600 years where the Semitic children of Jesus somehow become French. Whatever. And the bloodline of Jesus exists to this very day. And it's closer than Robert Langdon thinks, actually. Right? And you find out who it is.
We won't spoil that. Actually, we probably will.
We probably will.
Maybe later.
Well, I mean, just like any other book of this sort, that knowledge has to be a character we've known the whole book. Otherwise, it's not fun, right? If at the end of the book, they're like, and the last descendant of Christ is Francois the Plumber in the 14th arrondissement of Paris. And he lives there with his wife and their 3 cats. And that would be really dissatisfying if it ends with...
That's the end of Jesus' bloodline right there.
Or just that it's a character you couldn't have guessed, right? Because it's really a detective book, right? Mm-hmm. It's a mystery.
It's a mystery detective novel.
It's just, there's no detective, it's a symbology professor, which I just don't get tired of saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see, totally unrelated, sort of related, Boondock Saints?
I have not seen
There's
that,
a no. scene where there's what's his name, Willem Dafoe is the cop, and they're at some sort of scene, and some guy's like, what's the symbology of this, right? And then Willem Dafoe stares at him, he's like, symbolism, right? That's the word, right? That's a shitty action movie. Actually, it's like a cult classic action movie. They understood that symbology is not a fucking thing. Harvard hasn't figured it out yet, according to Dan Brown, but I digress. So the book, they find Robert Langdon, and he meets, of course, the beautiful, brilliant Sophie, who is she the daughter or the granddaughter. Of the director guy? And they go on this quest across Europe, following clues that have been hidden in Renaissance art, Enlightenment science writings, and that will lead them straight to the thing. So not only is there a conspiracy that has lasted, 2,000 years, but only famous people were involved in it until very recently.
You know, the head of the secret society protecting the Holy Grail were people like Leonardo da Vinci, Isaac Newton, Victor Hugo.
Random.
You know, famous people, and other famous people, I can't remember all their names right now, but...
Just pick one, it's there.
Not George from around the corner. No, it's only these super famous people.
Right, because they're interested in conspiracy theory shit, and not only are they interested in it, but then it's going to drive... The thing that made them famous, right? Da Vinci's art is only great because it has clues to this conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
That's just fucking dumb.
As you can tell, we're kind of skeptical about this book.
We are, because it's fucking stupid. But it is fun, and I enjoyed reading it.
You know what? It was fascinating. I was fascinated when I read it the first time, around when it came out, and then I reread it last week for the podcast, and I knew what happened. It was still fascinating, and I still wanted to keep reading and find out what happened next, even though I knew what happened next.
It is written in a really engaging style. So there's 105 chapters. The book's like 450 pages, depending on the printing.
Mm-hmm.
So that means each chapter is so short that you're kind of like, oh, let me read one more. And of course, every chapter ends cliffhanger-ishly.
Yep.
So there's a couple different threads of the plot that are moving along. And every chapter switches to a different one. You never get 2 chapters in a row, or maybe not too often, 2 chapters in a row where it's just on the same plot. It's always, here's Robert Langdon and Sophie. They get to this point. Ooh, this clue. next chapter, somewhere else. Oh, now we're following the assassin character, who's named Silas, who is doing all sorts of awful things, and it looks like he's about to go hurt somebody. End of chapter. And now we're going to go back to the French police.
And then they open a thing, and they look, and the way it's described is, oh, and then they look inside, and they immediately knew the answer. Okay, next chapter, and it goes to the next thing. It makes you like, oh, what did they find? Damn it! Fuck you!
It's just to lure you in. I mean, you know what? Fine. It's engaging. It's fun.
Very
got
engaging.
People to read it. That's why totally this book fun. Sold a fucking 100 million copies or something. I've read every Dan Brown book. There are not... I don't think there's any author I could say I've read every one of their books. But Dan Brown, it helps that he only has six.
And I mean, I've read most of them. Not quite all of them, though.
But I read them on purpose because I liked the Da Vinci Code. This came out when I was in high school. Or I found out about it. Came out when I was in high school. I read it in high school. And then I... So, though there's another book in this series. Cool. I'll read this book. Oh, he's written another book. I'll find that one. And at that point, it was four books. And there were two Robert Langdons and these two one-offs. But they're very, very similar.
Nobody reads those.
No, nobody does. But you know what? They actually were okay. They're the same thing. We'll talk about his plot formula. But they're fun. And as the new books came out, the last two that were big, big events over the last decade or so, I bought them within the first day or two that they came out. And I didn't camp out overnight to buy it, but when I was at the store, because every store would be selling them, like a supermarket all of a sudden has a display of books. Like, oh, I'll pick this up and I'll read this. And then I read it. It's like, yeah, that's exactly what I expected, but I still did it. I mean, they're very much Twinkie is probably not the right analogy. It's not good for you, but you feel like it's good for you. Maybe it's more like iceberg lettuce. There's no nutritional content in iceberg lettuce. It's shitty, but you're like, yeah, it's salad. Isn't this good for me? So you read the book and you're like, oh, I'm learning shit. And that's really the draw for it.
It is. You feel so smart.
Every chapter has this arcane knowledge. Like, you're let in on this big secret to learn about how Da Vinci's paintings worked. And then you learn about Newton's theories. And then you learn about this crazy biblical shit. And then the shadowy organization that's the real villain of the book, right? There's the villain that is killing people, but then he represents this other organization. And the book starts with a disclaimer. All of the things that are described in the book are described accurately. Actually, I'll get the exact wording for you. Because it was like, whoa, what does Dan Brown know?
Oh my God.
It says, all descriptions of artwork, architecture, documents, and secret rituals in this novel are accurate.
Oh my God.
So like, holy shit. Now, that's very cagely written, right? Because he doesn't say the organizations, but he's like, oh, this is a secret ritual of this organization. So you're like, oh, that means it's true, because he told me so on page one. But it's not true. So the bad guys is the Opus Dei, this legitimate organization. I mean, I don't know too much about them, honestly, but it's a Catholic group that do weird shit, apparently, like mortification of the flesh.
Do they really do that?
Some people do, but some people do that and they're not in the Opus Dei. Some people, especially going back like 100 plus years ago, people wearing hair shirts and whipping themselves on the back. And not just when they masturbated, just all the time. So that's kind of interesting. And they have an office in New York. Like, this is closer than... And you think, this isn't far away, this is in New York City. I live in New York City, holy shit. So it makes it seem really sexy, all the cool stuff in the book that he's describing that you think is real. And you feel so smart that you're in on the secret until you realize it's stupid.
Yeah.
We keep saying that his plots are the same. What is the formula? What is the Dan Brown plot formula?
All right, so having read all four of the Robert Langdon books, not the new one, of course, because it's not quite out yet, but all four of the Robert Langdon books, these are the elements that it involves. First of all, there's some secret mystery that requires an art history professor. I mean, that's kind of the premise of the book. That part's okay. There wouldn't be much of a book otherwise. Yep. However, the other things are so predictable in every single book.
Right. There's Robert Langdon is the guy, the main character, who knows everything and could figure out every puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. It's a mystery book. The main character has to have those kind of skills. I get it.
Sure, whatever.
Though he doesn't always figure it out right away, but it's like, it's eating at him. What is it? He knows. He should know. And then he connects the dots. But the plot then has some sort of seemingly unrelated event, some sort of like a murder of a guy, which triggers this investigation for Robert Langdon and actual police usually.
Yeah.
He does not work in concert with them. In some of the books, they're like actively work against him because they don't want him to find information or they think he's interfering in the mm-hmm. investigation. And there's a super secret government or religious organization.
Like a shadowy organization behind the main things in the plot. That's in every single book. And not only is a shadowy organization, but a shadowy organization that employs some sort of like secret agent assassin type character
right.
that is really, you know, tries to kill Robert Langdon and whatever the girl is this time, the Bond girl, you know, over and over again. And he has to evade them. And so there's like the secret assassin. And then there's also the beautiful and brilliant young woman who becomes his partner in solving this crime slash mystery slash conspiracy theory slash clusterfuck. And who's, you know, whatever the things that Langdon, Robert Langdon, isn't good at, she is amazingly good at, and that helps the plot along.
Yes, and she, of course, is going to end up banging Robert Langdon at the end of the book.
Yeah, well, you know.
I'm trying to think of
that's
good...
That's just how you read book.
Well, that's a given. I'm trying to think of a good Bond girl name for them that would have the same sexual innuendo and be nerdier. I'm having a hard time. I'm working on it. I got Anita Clitorature so far. I feel like that might work.
That's good.
So they're... And Robert Langdon is, you know, this middle-aged college professor guy. He's like in his 40s. He's getting a little salt and pepper in the hair. Mm-hmm. He wears a tweed jacket with elbow patches and looks exactly like Dan Brown does on the jacket of the book.
Coincidence?
Yeah, right? That's the conspiracy, that Dan Brown is Robert Langdon. And they're not novels. It's a memoir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
it's just his diary.
And Robert Langdon finds all these clues and solves them. And it's all based on information that he has as a symbologist, right? He's like, oh, you know, I'm remembering the thing from, actually it's in Angels and Demons, but I had this thought that, was that D3 refers to this different Galileo text that's never been published, but I suspect it's in the Vatican Library, and the Vatican, nobody can go into the Vatican Library, but I think it's there, and of course, by the end of the book, he gets into the Vatican Library, and it's there!
Oh my God.
And it is of crucial importance to the plot, and it's the same thing for everything. He's like, you know, some people speculate that when Da Vinci painted the Mona Lisa, he was really doing blah, 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 and it turns out that that's true, and it's really important, but Robert Langdon's the only one who really knew it and put it together. And that's the stupidness of the book.
Yep.
So, speaking of stupidness of the book, let's get to our other beer.
Excellent.
It's just, man, we love Flying Dog. This is...
Yeah, sponsor us.
This is their Imperial IPA, and the name really applies to this book. It's called The Truth. Because that's the whole point of the book, is that you're finding, and Robert Langdon and the other characters are finding this... hidden truth that's really important. So, pick this. This was a no-brainer. Though it has, like, political stuff on the front, as I do solemnly swear, it applies.
Yeah.
That is a...
It smells like a strong IPA.
That shit is dank. That smells like a hop money shot. It's delicious. It's a really nice IPA. I think if it's Imperial, I mean, it's pretty, we're on the stronger side. Yeah, 8.7%. You do not taste that. Awesome.
Really? I do. You know what? I guess I don't taste a ton of alcohol, but it is a very strong IPA.
Oh, yeah. It's hoppy as fuck.
This must be, how many IBUs this one is? Because it must be close to 100.
It doesn't say. Not everyone puts that on their bottles, which is kind of, I never know if they're putting it to like inform me or if they're putting it to boast. I mean, there are boasting beers. Michelar makes a beer called 1,000 IBUs. That's not a warning. That's like a dare.
I think you talked about that in the last podcast.
It is a book, a beer that weighs on my mind.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So this, we can probably find it on their website, but it's up there. But it's nice. It's not overly done. Sometimes you get these really, really hoppy IPAs, and it's just hop juice. It's just hops and nothing to balance it out. You know, no body, no malt, that it just... It's like hop tea. This is really nice. And I've had this before, and I will have it again, I'm sure, because it is excellent.
It's good.
So let's talk about symbology, what it is and what it is not. So I'll start, what symbology is bullshit.
Yeah, it's nothing. Symbology isn't real. Here's why. Because here's the thing. Symbols, like little characters or the signs of the zodiac, there's no content there. There's nothing you can objectively say, this symbol means this. It's all what people used to do before, but yeah, maybe there's no history there. I had a professor who said, if there's no text, there's no history. Because if there's no text, it's entirely up to interpretation. Then there is no way to prove anything correct or incorrect when it's entirely based on interpretation. So you're pretty much just making shit up when you're just looking at symbols.
When you think of history and prehistory, right? Prehistory before written records. We know a lot about prehistory in terms of like things that happened because there's evidence and artifacts and genetic things we can look at. But when you get to like a prehistoric, meaning pre-writing symbol, like cave paintings... There is never going to be a way to definitively prove what those are, what they represent, why they were made. You could say how they were made. You could say when they were made. But you're never going to say, oh, this painting of a buffalo means that they worshipped a buffalo, or it means that they ate a buffalo, or it means that they fucked a buffalo. It doesn't matter. Because it could have been any of them. Might have been all three, and the order would be very interesting. But they you know, that there's no way to prove it. And it works the same way even with modern day, or, you know, in the case of this book, 500, 600 year old symbols. If it's just a symbol, it doesn't mean anything on its own, right?
Nope.
So it's a horseshit thing in the book, but it's also just not a discipline in general. Like, there are plenty of bullshit disciplines in academia where people study really bizarre shit or, like, really specific shit that like, sure, you're that math, that's a thing. You're studying this and it's important.
Like the hermeneutics of...
You know what? You know what was a fucking thing when I was in school? Disability studies in music.
Wow.
So... disability studies, as far as I understand, is kind of like understanding the way disabled people have lived their lives and been treated both in a legal and cultural way in different places. But in music, they're then looking at pieces of classical music like opera and song cycles, and they're saying things like, oh, well, this character clearly was autistic, or this character had gender dysphoria, or whatever the fuck they, like, disability or ailment or impairment they want to they find. And then you can look at him like, I guess... who knows? That doesn't matter. It's stupid. Sorry. I'm just going to say it. That's a dumb discipline.
That specific discipline.
But symbology, if you read... so when I read this book and I was in high school, I was like, man, symbology sounds fucking cool. Because it's a lot of things that I like. I'm fucking nerdy. I like history. I like art. I like linguistic stuff. Oh, that's a fucking thing? You could just do all those things?
I could just study all that and be the smartest person ever, like Robert Langdon.
Right? And he has the exact knowledge necessary... like, what, there are a couple scenes throughout the series, I forget which one's in this book, where he's going, talking to us. I think it's in The Lost Symbol, the one I'm thinking of now, where he shows a picture and to demonstrate symbology to his class, and it's, the kids have to interpret it, and it's like George Washington laying the cornerstone.
That was The Lost Symbol.
Yeah, and they're like, he's lifting up a brick. And then, because Dan Brown has learned a thing or two about teaching, and he uses wait time, so he just waits, and then someone says, no, he's lowering a brick, and they're like, oh, holy shit!
Oh my god.
That just blew the case wide open. It's just fucking stupid. So, symbology, according to the Da Vinci Code, is equal parts art history, history, conspiracy theories, linguistics, and math. Because he has to know the Fibonacci sequence. He has...
That's fucking BS.
He has to know how to do a wide array... of coding devices to, you know, like different ciphers.
Yeah, ciphers, yeah.
That's
what the Bond girl does in this in this book. She's a cryptologist and knows all about these codes and ciphers.
That might be more of a real thing. I'm not sure.
I mean, real cryptologists, they don't bother with that really, really simple stuff anymore, because today's cryptologists are about, you know, decrypting super gigantic prime numbers with a quantum computer in order to find your bank records. It's not about, you know, finding the Fibonacci sequence in a series of random numbers. Nobody cares about that anymore.
Well, then maybe that's something vaguely historically accurate, since these conspiracy clues are centuries or decades at least old. They kind of predate the multiplying two ginormous prime numbers to get an encryption cipher kind of thing. In base 64 math or whatever the hell that these banking records use now. So that's why it could be a 5-letter code on a little vial filled with vinegar and papyrus.
Yeah.
And the password, of course, was Apple. Which is dramatic. That's a dramatic scene,
right? It was a dramatic scene, very.
But also...
very clever.
Langdon has some ability at sleight of hand because he's able to secretly... put in the code while being held at gunpoint or whatever.
Not noticing, yeah.
Slide out the scroll of paper, scramble it back in. And
throw it.
Yeah.
Oh my god, no, yeah.
So all of this is that Robert Langdon is the nerdy James Bond that can solve all these things, but it is just absurd. Like, that's... and I'm willing to concede a lot for a book, right? Like, we've talked about suspending your disbelief for certain things.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you want to say there's a crazy conspiracy theory and that's the plot? All right, I'll go along with that. That's the thing. Why not? People like conspiracy theories. Some of them might even be true. I don't really think that, but you never know.
The thing is about conspiracy theories is there are real conspiracies. However, most conspiracy theories, they are not true.
Well, conspiracy relies on incredible ability to keep secrets over long periods of time, especially long in the case of the Da Vinci Code, and nobody tripping up and giving away too much. But they've given up just enough that you can kind of glean that there's something there, right?
I mean, if we really want to get into conspiracy theories, most of them follow a very similar kind of format, where the world is actually controlled by a shadowy cabal of
Well, that's the Bilderberg Society. We know that.
Right?
That's obvious.
You know, fill in that blank right there. That is actually behind everything, and that all the evidence that really points their way really doesn't point their way unless you put all the right clues together. That's a conspiracy theory right there.
Right, and some individuals know how to discern the clues mm-hmm. from the like purposely left misleading clues, right? Because one of the things conspiracy...
The people with their eyes open.
Right, oh yeah, they're woke. Conspiracy theorists will always say, when you try to say, actually, I think it's this, and they say, huh, that's what they want you to think.
Exactly.
So I have this inability to not talk, and I was in a cab once with a cab driver who was going on about conspiracy theories, and he started pointing at jet contrails, because
really?
He picked me up at the airport, so it's a good chance he's going to see some. It's like, see that? That's the government right there, and they don't want you to know, and this is just, everything is tied together, and it's like rambling bunch of shit. I mean, he's a New York City cab driver. Very nice guy. Got me home, timely fashion. Had interesting comments, I have to say, about traffic patterns, but his idea about, jet contrails, stupid. And then I just couldn't help myself. And I said, yeah, but that just means that the government never, like, they're really good at keeping a secret. Like, the government can't even fucking, like, fund itself properly, and yet they're gonna be able to do that? That's amazing. Like,
and they're going to be able to keep the aliens at Roswell secret for 50 years.
But just enough leaks out, and it's only the shit that's not 100% compelling, but 95% compelling. And he's like, oh, that's what they want you to think. I was in the car with my wife, and she's like, just shut the fuck up. Shut up. Which is, actually, she says that in a lot of different situations to me, but she says, just shut the fuck up, all right? He's driving us. We want him focusing on the road right now. I don't want him to start pointing at different jet contrails. Like, see that one right there? That's the fluoride that they're putting out into the atmosphere, and that's going to make our bones weak. So that way we have to rely on the communists.
And turn the frogs gay.
Oh, well, just like you said, there are real conspiracies.
There are real conspiracies.
Turn the frogs gay. That's right.
Alex Jones reference right there.
Alex Jones. Well, I mean, maybe my cab driver was a lizard person. I don't really know. But they're interesting, because especially if you're the least bit credulous and you go, you want to know the truth about things, right? Some people don't care. And they just like, I don't really give a shit. I just want to go to work and come home and drink beers and listen to the Drunk Guys podcast. But other people...
Subscribe.
Yes, subscribe.
And rate us.
Yes,
five stars.
Whatever you're going to do, plus 5 stars, please. Because otherwise, the conspiracy will continue where...
The Bilderbergs win.
So there's some people don't give a shit. They don't have the time for it. But then there's a lot of people that are like, especially I think people who are vaguely educated are probably the ideal target for a conspiracy theory, right? Because they can read. They like knowing shit. And then they just sort of somehow get on this perverted path and they go down to the conspiracy theory way of learning. And then they think that they've learned the real thing, especially people who are not educated in any sort of like traditional formal way, like people who don't go to college. Not that you necessarily have to go to college to be smart or educated, but people who go, it kind of confirms that I never needed to go to that highfalutin college. I got the real knowledge.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people, not every person, but a lot of people.
I needed algebra.
Right.
Now that I know.
That Muslim math that they try to put on us. That Muslim math that makes the frogs gay as well. No, I think that's part of the conspiracy theory kind of thing. It's people who want to know stuff and they have good intentions and they just are interested.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get lit on this stupid shit. And then Dan Brown comes out and puts out a book and you're like, see, look at all the clues are right here. Even this fucking dumb guy from New Hampshire could figure it out. And you know this, you know, the New Hampshire people are like, Nate.
Yeah, no, they're all like Dan Brown.
White.
Well, that is true. That is the most accurate thing. All right, yeah. So anyway, conspiracy theories, they're bullshit.
They are.
And you know what? We're going to prove it to you right now.
This is where the truth comes out.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, okay. We're literally going to make this up right now. So Dan Brown has 8 letters.
It does.
And you know what that means?
I don't know. What does it mean?
We'll go back.
Well, Dan Brown's 8 letters. But Dan is 3 letters and Brown is 5 letters, which is part of the Fibonacci sequence.
Ooh.
So, suck a bag. And then the next number is 8, or of course, because that's how the Fibonacci sequence works. So clearly, it really proves my theory already, but I'll keep going.
Yeah.
That this is his memoirs. It is not, because that's the real thing, right? Robert Langdon is Dan Brown, is a real guy, did get all that foreign gash. But so, was just banging his way from museum to museum across Europe. So his name is the Fibonacci sequence, right there, boom. Then, he's from, I don't know what part of fucking New Hampshire.
Exeter, New Hampshire.
So X. The X is clearly just a cross that's been turned on its side.
Oh my god.
And it also has a T in there, which is like the real cross, so like if you can't miss it.
There's two crosses.
It's two.
The two crosses. How clear could it be?
Which is clearly a reference to the two thieves who were crucified on the opposite sides of Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you see how this is connected, right? Which is a standard conspiracy theory kind of technique, right? You just like, say random shit, mm-hmm. and you say, don't you see the connection? And then people feel stupid. They're like, oh, yeah, I have to see the connection between these unrelated things. Two thieves crucified with Jesus, book about Jesus. Oh, yeah, it all makes sense now. And then,
all right, so we've got the two thieves that were crucified next to Jesus. So we've got the number two, right? That's got to be the important part of that story.
It's extremely important because this book is shit. That's where your number two comes in.
Number two. We proved it. Boom. The evidence was there all along.
You are welcome.
How could we not see that?
I mean, just to you know, hammer home a little more. The first book, Angels and Demons, two things. Number two.
They're angels and they're demons. Oh, wait. And they're both plural. So ooh. Really, it's two squared. It's two to the two times two.
Whoa.
It's a lot of twos.
It's a lot of number twos, which is the writing career of Dan Brown. And yeah. I have to say, Angels and Demons describes the kind of hangover shits I take after recording these episodes. I'm going to just drop a serious Da Vinci load in the bowl there. And Inferno applies when I've had spicy food.
And spicy beer we had a couple weeks ago.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's dangerous shit. I mean, quite literally, dangerous shit. And nothing applies to the lost symbol because Da Vinci Code was fun. Angels and Demons was fun. Even Inferno were fun reads. They're silly. They're easy to make fun of. The lost symbol was horrific.
There are
works of art described in the Da Vinci Code that I'd be willing to sacrifice for posterity if it got rid of the lost symbol. You know what? Fuck that Last Supper thing. It's falling apart anyway. I'll trade that if you just remove the lost symbol from my experience as a reader because it was such a piece of crap.
You know, most Mona Lisa's kind
of
overrated.
It's like the size of a postcard anyway.
Let's just get rid of it.
It's not that great. It's not that great. If there's nothing else you've learned today, it's that we, the drunk guys, clearly possess the really important knowledge that is being held from you. Mm-hmm. And that's why you should subscribe to our podcast.
For sure. All right, everybody. So the next Dan Brown book is called Origin. It is not out yet, though it may be out by the time you're listening to this podcast. But what we're going to do right now is we're going to read the description and see if we can figure out the plot of this next book. All right, so I just Googled it, barnesandnoble.com. People who bought this also bought pretty stupid shit. But anyway, all right. Overview. Origin by Dan Brown. In keeping with his trademark style, Dan Brown, author of The Da Vinci Code and Inferno, interweaves codes, science, religion, history, art, and architecture into this new novel. Origin thrusts Harvard symbologist Robert Langdon into the dangerous intersection of humankind's two most enduring questions in the earth-shaking discovery that will answer them.
Oof. All right, so the first question, what are the enduring questions? One has to be, is there a God? The other one is like, why are we here? Or something like that. Or, where did we come from?
I would think that too, yeah.
All right, so we have something about God and the creation of man, and art and history, and maybe cave paintings comes up here, and then earth-shaking discovery. You know what this fucking sounds like? This sounds like his first book. Did you? Holy shit, Deception Point is the first Dan Brown book. It is not a Robert Langdon book. But the plot of the book is that a bunch of scientists are called to Antarctica to look at this meteor that's been discovered that has evidence of life from other planets.
That's called the panspermia theory.
Right. Well, I have some panspermia when I get really excited. but not since I've been like 15. Now it's more like drain spermia. But so the panspermia theory, they're like, oh, all these scientists go and they find this thing frozen in Antarctica. This in the, you know, deep in the ice is this meteor that has visible fossils of whatever, like fucking protozoans or whatever. And then, oh, life began on another fucking planet. Holy shit, that's really cool. Spoiler, it didn't. Spoiler.
It was a shadowy organization and an assassin that planted it there.
It was exactly both of those things happened. So NASA is behind it. Because
NASA?
So here's the thing. In the book, and this is actually the most mundane of the conspiracies, that NASA just staged it because the budget was coming up in Congress and they were going to cut money to NASA. And people were like, we're not going to the moon anymore. Fuck NASA. Spending billions of dollars for them to put toasters into space. So fuck them. And so they put this staged thing. They just find this fossil of a as-to-yet undiscovered ancient stupid unicellular organism, plant it in Antarctica, call a bunch of scientists over to confirm it, and their plan was eventually to just kind of like, oh, actually it turns out it was not from space. Sorry, but that would be totally buried in the news at that point. People would have forgotten about it, and by then maybe, you know, some politician would have gotten a blowjob and that would be big news. So, and there is an assassin who is doing, what, they kill people in, like, fucked up ways. Like, he, like, I forget if the assassin's a man or a woman. It doesn't really matter. It's just, like, whoever, working for the gov. And the man, the assassin, is knocking people unconscious somehow. I forget how. And then filling their mouths with snow. So they just suffocate in this sleep.
Sounds like the snowman.
And it looks sort of, you know, I guess it looks a little more natural than you just got shot in the head, but whatever. And then all the scientists realize, actually, no, there's tons of evidence that this is not from outer space, and then they start getting picked off one at a time. I forget exactly how it ties together, like who the assassin's working for or not. I think it was for some particular congressman or guy, head of NASA or something. But holy shit, that sounds like this book.
Yeah, it does.
The origins. So if he goes panspermia, then we know he's just plagiarizing himself, which is a new trick for Dan Brown. He's usually accused of plagiarizing other people.
Yeah.
But the other option is, like, maybe there's some other thing, and we're going to find out if there's a... hope there's a monkey god. That's what I hope. Lucy, that's what God looked like. Created the monkey, and then an evolution took hold, and then we became this inferior species to the one true god.
That's the earth-shaking discovery that will answer them?
I don't know. It could be anything. That is so vague. Anything could be described there. It is so vague.
You know what? I bet the plot was so weird, this Barnes & Noble reviewer couldn't even describe it.
Well, is that the thing from the paper, from the publisher, though?
Yes, you're right, the publisher.
Is there anything? Let's see. You know what? Here we go. I'm going to look up the irrefutable Wikipedia. As Wikipedia might have a little bit more, and if it does, then I'll be happy. Well, it's got the same fucking... Man, Wikipedia blows. It's just saying how great it is. There's a page on it on Wikipedia, and as of right now, it has Origin is an upcoming mystery thriller, blah, 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 by Dan Brown. It is the fifth this, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be released this day. And then it has a section called Characters. So you click on it, Characters, and it has one. Robert Langdon, an American professor of symbology at Harvard University, Cambridge, Massachusetts. And then it has four references. What are the references for this?
You need four references for that?
Just, oh, man. But I mean, it's been a while since he put out Inferno. That had to be, what, 2014 or something like that? It's been a few years.
You know what? It must take a really long time to research all this stupid nonsense.
I guess so, right? Because you just kind of... But you have to just find... Oh, it's 2013. You have to just find a bunch of shit... And then think of a way to connect it.
There was a movie for that?
Inferno, yeah.
With Tom Hanks?
He's Robert Langdon in all three movies. They made three movies of the shit.
I've seen probably two of them, but I don't think I've seen this one.
Yeah, Inferno came out recently. They totally skipped the law symbol because it was abortion. It was awful. It was, ugh. But you know what? This one, you're going to read it?
You know, I want to say no. I'm not going to read it, but there's a pretty good chance I'll read it. When I really want some, like, thriller, you know, just suspenseful novel to get me through a long, you know, trip, I might read this.
I'm totally going to read it. You got to read something when you drop a deuce, and I can't always be heavy stuff, you know? There's nothing wrong with reading trashy, pulpy crap. I don't think so. If that's all you read...
Occasionally.
Yeah, it's if that's the only thing you ever read, then you're doing yourself a disservice. Just like if the only movies you ever watch are just, like, dick and fart movies... Or if the only music you listen to is shitty pop music that's of the moment. Like, if you only listen to or only read or watch or experience very vapid, meant-for-mass-consumption culture, you're missing other stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you only experience super heavy-duty shit, like if I only read Nietzsche, like, that would not be great either. Like, you need to balance it out. Sure. Sometimes you need something to cleanse your palate after reading or watching or whatever, something serious and heavy. You need a break from that. And this is the perfect place for a Dan Brown book.
Yep.
You're not going to read Infinite Jest while you sit on the beach or while you wait for the bus. You know.
Well, hipsters would.
Hipsters totally would. But they also will hold it in such a way that you can see the cover at all times, so they know you know what they're reading. Which I read a lot of Infinite Jest on the train, actually.
And made sure everyone knew it.
Well, just because I always have to stand on the train, because it's just where I get on the train, and it's a fucking heavy-ass book, so I would always prop it on top of the railing and not pay attention when I spilled coffee on people. They were not happy. So I'm going to totally read it. I will. It'll probably be fine. Three out of the four Robert Langdon books I enjoyed. The other one I still read. I still read The Lost Symbol in like a weekend.
You know, I think I read that the weekend it came out.
I certainly did. I and bought it the day it came
terrible.
Out.
It was terrible.
Yeah, it was gross.
The worst weekend of my life.
You know, you're doing okay. There have been worse weekends than that.
Sure. But I just can't believe I had to keep reading it even though I knew how bad it was.
Well, because it goes, the writing is tight. Is it beautiful literature? No. I don't think anyone's ever going to say Dan Brown's the greatest writer of any generation or anything like that. He's never been considered for any sort of literary award. The writing is pretty straightforward, you know, suspense writing. It's Stephen King. I remember reading Stephen King shit all over The Da Vinci Code. They're kind of the same writing as far as I could tell.
Ouch.
Not to say it's bad or good. It's just it's the same kind of thing. It's like that writing where suspenseful chapters end on points where you're like, oh, I got to know what happens next. Characters are interesting enough, and stuff happens. Is it fantastic writing? No, but it's fun. You know, sometimes you want a fun thing. I'm not saying that's a shit on Stephen King or Dan Brown. That caliber of writing. And you enjoy it sometimes. Like sometimes you want to watch a rerun of Cheers or something. Watch crap that you don't like, or you want to eat White Castle. You have stuff that's not great, but for that moment, it's fine. So I will read it. Will I read it the day it comes out? I was disappointed. I used to have this book in physical copy. I had the hardcover illustrated edition, which is really cool because it had pictures of all the art and shit that is described. Because when you were reading it, it's like a really cool thing. And then you're like, oh, that's that street in Paris they're talking about. That's that statue here. That's that church there. It was actually really cool to see because then you don't just feel like a smart person because you can name drop some art, but you actually have seen it and you know a little bit more about it, and it makes it a little more fulfilling. I liked that, but I sold that. Like, I gave it to somebody or something when I was moving. I was like, I don't have fucking room in my apartment for this bullshit. Begone, Dan Brown books. And I got rid of all of them. Oh, no. And I've been hunting for them ever since.
Who would have known?
Yeah.
Who would have wanted to keep them?
Well, because I didn't realize eventually I'd have a space to store garbage. But it's probably for the best that I don't have a shelf of Dan Brown books. It makes me look a little less snobby than I like to pretend I am. So join us next week when we read Christopher Moore's book, Fool. And if you want to get extra credit, you could also read Shakespeare's King Lear.
It's probably a good idea. Let us know what you thought. Send us an email, drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com. Or
follow us on Twitter @drunkguysbc, as in book club.
And if you liked our podcast, please subscribe and please give us a rating.
Yeah. And whatever rating you were going to give, just add 5 stars. It doesn't hurt you at all. Definitely helps us.
Helps us.
And if you have free beer for us, that helps us even more. Mm. See you next week.